Music City Todd approved. The Bill King Show.
Newberg 24/7 Sports covers the Noles. Some may ask, hey Bill, why would he choose to cover the Noles? Well, when he started, they were pretty good. Not so good right now. Berg, how are you doing this morning, sir?
You know, when I started, they were actually pretty bad. It was 2010. We didn't really know where Florida State. We were hoping that Jimbo Fisher, this guy named Jimbo Fisher, was going to be the one that turns it around. But remember, the Gators were kind of coming off of their run.
Right.
We didn't know by 2010 that the Gators' run was over yet. But, yeah, it was a quick rise, because by 2011, by 2012, you could tell that the Florida State team was not only headed in the right direction, but destined to meet greatness at some point.
Yeah, I guess 2010 was the end of what they termed the lost decade in Florida State history. Bobby had tried many different angles to rekindle everything, and it wasn't working. It was fading, and it was sad. And you had the whole Jeff Bowden nepotism thing that everybody argued about. And yeah, you're right. But I guess what I should have said when introducing you is the brand, though, was still kind of fresh. It was stale, but it wasn't as distant as it is now, at least the way it feels.
Correct. And the funny thing is, we were 10 years out from a national championship in 2010, 10 or 11 years out
right.
from a national championship in 2010, but it felt like they were closer. Now we're, you know, 7 or 8 years away from a national championship, but it feels like it's been 20.
And Berg, those rosters 10, 11 years ago and prior never got to the depths of despair like this roster.
No, not even close. Not even close. And because we call it the lost decade.
Right.
Like that decade, Florida State won 2 or 3 ACC championships or more than that. And, you know, looking back on the lost decade, we clamored for the lost decade after having a 3-win season and starting this season off 0-3.
Yeah, and you mentioned something. Florida was finishing up their run, but in the moment, you don't know that. You feel like, okay, it's going to continue. And Urban Meyer decided, you know, right in there, he was wavering and all that was going on, but he stayed that extra year. But
and at the same time, I remember the head coach in waiting thing at Texas didn't work out the way it was supposed to.
Right.
And now you have this head coach in waiting thing at FSU that's about to go, and I'm just like, oh, is this going to be the same as what happened at Texas?
Couple things here. You never know when your run's over, because as you mentioned, we didn't know it at the time for Florida.
Mm-hmm.
But another note is, nobody's doing that coaching and waiting thing anymore either, are they?
No, that was crazy. It was a whole thing back then. Like,
right.
There was a couple, and there was other schools talking about it, and it was a weird time where they thought that, because I think there were some legends leaving the game at that time, and
right.
There's a new college football system in place with recruiting taking on more of an emphasis and marketing. And I think some of these programs thought, well, we'll just transition old guard to new guard and we'll call it head coach in waiting. But that built up a lot of pressure. I think there's a lot of undue consequences that came with that, too.
Now, some of them worked. The Jimbo thing worked as the coach in waiting. Muschamp was promised, but Mack would never leave. He would never
right,
leave.
It never happened. It
right,
fell
right.
apart.
He just sat there until he got a call from Florida, which that's a good call to get. I'll give you another one, though. I don't know how many people remember. James Franklin was named the coach in waiting at Maryland under Ralph Regan, And when Ralph got fired, they decided to scrap it, and we're not going to give it to you. And then Vanderbilt called, and he ended up in Nashville. But we had several of those.
Didn't Penn State have a situation? Were they trying to set up a head coach in waiting at the end of – I can't remember. But there was, like – then there were some smaller programs that did it, too. It was just kind of a fad that ran through college football about 10, 15 years ago.
Jim down in Jupiter says, please ask Berg if Norvell will be showing the coordinators the door soon, and is he going to be calling the offensive play soon?
Well, he is calling the offensive play. And if it does continue to go down this road, then yes, I do think we're going to see a sacrifice coordinator too. You know, like you said, he calls the offensive plays, so I don't know if the offensive coordinator is more of a symbolic firing if that happens than anything. I don't think that's really going to change the philosophy of FSU's offense whatsoever. This is Mike Norvell's offense. He handpicked Kenny Dillingham to be kind of his eyes and ears in the booth during the game. So I don't know how much of an impact the offensive side of the ball would have, but it could be a symbolic thing that they do. But if the defense keeps struggling, I mean, yeah, I could certainly see a change at defensive coordinator with Adam Fuller.
And Wake Forest game, was that the worst showing to date, or where would it rank?
Probably the week before against Jacksonville State is probably worse than that, but it's still bad. We're just dragging on. We joke about the rock bottom, hitting rock bottom. Now we're just dragging on the bottom here. They got to show improvement. Every week is kind of the same at this point. No improvement. Okay. Another embarrassing loss, another record broken. It's just a repeating pattern until they get their head out of their you-know-what and start playing better. And this week, Louisville comes to town. And if you watch the Friday night matchup against UCF, you would know that this is a up and down, it's a streaky Louisville team that's coming off of a big win over UCF. I think they're 2-1 to start the season. But Malik Cunningham had a great game against UCF. Malik Cunningham doesn't always play great, but if he plays the way he did against UCF and has chunk plays and gets out of the pocket and creates issues, it's going to be a long night for Florida State. But if they can get pressure on him and they can force him to get uncomfortable, then you'll have a chance to beat him. But, you know, right now Florida State desperately needs this win at home.
Josh Newberg with us. What's the feeling in your Sunshine State about the Gators' most recent matchup with Alabama and a near win?
I think they're celebrating their moral victory right now, continue to from the weekend. Not a lot of people, including Gator fans, expected them to stay in it. So losing by two and having a shot to win, and, you know, hey, if they miss that extra, if they make the extra point and they have a shot to tie the game at the end, it's a whole different conversation. But they didn't win. You know, it's still Alabama. Alabama's going to continue to go on. Maybe Alabama and UF face off again one more time before the season ends. But the Gators got to beat Georgia. They got Tennessee this weekend. I expect them to roll there. They're, you know, on pace for what kind of the expectations were for the season for the 40 Gators.
Berg, did you unload your CEI stock?
No. Did you?
I never had any. I told you I didn't.
No, I bought more. I was in at 70 cents and I was trying to hold to $2, and then it dipped to like $1.30 some and I added more, and I'm still waiting for that $2 hit.
I think you'll get it. Now, some people are getting impatient there. It's been hovering around 160. It actually, the last week when you and I talked, it flirted with 174-ish, somewhere in there.
Yeah, I was going to sell between like $182, start scaling out, and it never quite got there, so I didn't get out. But yesterday it dropped down to 143, and I bought more on that dip, and it promptly is back up to 160-some, so
that's pretty good buys in there. That's a pretty good buy. Some of these people on Twitter are claiming they have millions of shares. I don't know if they're lying or what, but
hey, more power to them. As long as we need people to buy, so as long as they're still buying, then
right,
I'm happy.
Josh Duper.
Anything else you're watching today?
I'm sorry?
Any other stocks you're watching today?
No, because right now we're so hot and cold. I mean, we had the bloodletting on Monday, right? That just was it Monday mm-hmm. or Tuesday?
Yes, it was Monday.
Yeah, where the S&P got down around 130, and it actually rallied to about minus 70. And they're saying that we've still got some of that left in us. And you know when that happens, it sucks everything down, basically.
You don't have any options running out this week?
I had some yesterday, and I scaled out of BBIG, and they didn't materialize. They didn't hit. So not really much. Not right now. The chop, I tell you what, the chop is very hard on options because you have the expiration and everything. It's
and the swings are violent. Yeah,
right.
You get dangerous.
Right. So not the, since you live over there by the water, not the seas you want to be in a boat on, you know? You
no, not the glass waters, no.
Not at all. All right, Berg, we will see you next week, sir.
All right, Bill, talk to you soon.
Josh Newberg, 24/7 Sports.